check it out now.
Live from the SiriusXM studios at the Wynn in Las Vegas, our final megapod of the NFL season for Super Bowl 60. Gil Alexander, it is the Seahawks and the Patriots. Seahawks, 4.5-point favorites, 45.5 is the total. The money line, which we're still waiting to see if it gets muted, if underdog bettors end up betting the underdog on the money line, right now as low as minus 225 on the Seahawks. We shall see if that comes down between now and game time on Sunday. We're doing this on Wednesday morning. A big shout to the pillars of the show from his mom's cork attic in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Todd Wishnev at T Wishnev. Toddy, what's happening?
Hi, Gil Alexander. How are you?
I'm doing great. And Will Hill at not the Will Hill, two E's on the V, the host of the Should Have Bet More podcast. What's happening, Will?
Yo, how you doing, man? What's going on, guys? Sad, bittersweet here because, you know, this is, as much as we bust balls, this is a really fun 60, 90 minutes every week. It was weird not having it last week. I know you did it, Gilly, but me and Todd were off. It's sad, but it should be a fun last one. I'm trying to decipher what shirt that is Todd is wearing. It's like a purple with what school is that? There's some sort of logo on Todd's shirt.
It's not a real. This guy Rich, who's in my Discord, is a real great guy. He has a sports clothing thing, so he always sends me like Pitt and Steelers sweatshirts and sweatpants. And so this time he sent me some shirts of just random schools. So he sent me like UConn, Miami, and then he sent me this one, which is like Minnesota State, which I don't even think is a real. That's like a division something school. But anyways, they're all nice stuff. So always a shout out to Rich for the sporting wear.
All right. I want to jump in here because Marco and VR, who used to be on this podcast years ago, they did 142 episodes. This is all courtesy of Tim Lawson, the Megapod historian. Tim, the host of the Better Life podcast, was on the Vegas Lifestyle 15th annual edition last week, but he's been doing Megapod historian things for us all year. Todd, now the most episodes ever for any co-host, 154 total episodes from Todd, 66 with Mike Palm, 66 now with Will. This is the 66, 22 with Parlay, Jeff Barles in between. Toddy Wishnev, everybody, the most Megapod appearances as a co-host. And let me just say that
of Will's 66 appearances, how many one and twos has he put?
Oh, fuck off. Seriously?
I gave a nice touching. That one's gotta go.
I gave a nice touching tribute to the Megapod, how I was sad to see it go. And then you come in after the whistle, will just spear me in the back. That is a personal foul.
I want to know, Will, how you did on, because I know you talked about how bad you were running earlier in the season the last time I was on. Did it improve?
No.
A little bit.
No, a little bit, yeah.
A little, yeah.
That is the voice of Rufus Peabody. Now, speaking of Megapod historian stats, this is Rufus's 17th career Megapod appearance, 17th, 7 during the postseason. By the way, the 17 ties him now for the second most Megapod guest appearances ever. Only Joe Fortenbaugh has more. Wow, what an honor for you, Rufus. By the way, Dr. Bob, most consecutive regular season appearances, 9. Drew Dinsick, most consecutive postseason appearances, 6. Mark Meltzer, 15 Vegas Lifestyles in a row. That is Rufus Peabody. For those who don't know, let me give that. Rufus, by the way, one of the most famous, if not the most famous, and maybe the most successful bettor of his generation here in the North American side of things, because we don't know about globally. He may object to that characterization, but the real quick bio on Rufus, for those who don't know, Rufus, you will correct me if I'm incorrect on any of these details or if I'm skipping over parts. He went to T.C. Williams High School in Northern Virginia. Wasn't that a movie was done about that? Was the football team?
It was. Remember the Titans.
Then he goes to Yale because Rufus has a big brain. So he ends up at Yale. He does his thesis on the inefficiencies in the baseball betting market. While at Yale, he sees this, was it Sports Illustrated with Gene Wojciechowski?
It was.
Article?
It was.
He learns about Las Vegas sports consultants run by Roxy Roxborough. Roxy was getting ready to move on.
Roxy had already moved on.
He had already moved on.
It was Kenny White who was running the show at that point.
Okay, you become fascinated with this. Maybe I should just let you tell it. But it's better if
I tell it. Better if you tell it.
And so Rufus becomes fascinated. He's like, oh my God, can I do an internship here? They're like, we don't do internships. Rufus somehow finagles his way in there nonetheless. Gets a job there. Imagine Yale guy, right? Does his thesis on this stuff. He gets a job there. He learns that side of the business. And then one day he decides with he was doing Super Bowls and props are out. Remember, Super Bowl props began Super Bowl 20 when Art Manteris at Caesars decided to do, hey, will William the Refrigerator Perry score a touchdown? It went from 20-1 all the way down to 2-1. He actually did get a touchdown in that blowout over the Patriots. Mike Ditka later regretted it because Walter Payton didn't get a touchdown in the twilight of his career. But anyway, Rufus shows up for the Arizona Cardinals-Pittsburgh Steelers Super Bowl. And by the way, Aaron Schatz has that Arizona Cardinals team as the worst ever team to ever make the Super Bowl per DVOA, dating all the way back to 1978. Aaron doesn't do the first 12, 13 years. But anyway, Rufus is using his model now at this point to predict outcomes in the Super Bowl. And he notices Gary Russell of the Pittsburgh Steelers, big number to score the first touchdown. Rufus thought the chances of that happening were far greater than the number suggested. I believe it was 40-1. Bingo, bango, he hits that. He was borrowing money to make all his bets for this. And this is the first thing that Rufus was ever really recognized for, was betting Super Bowl props. First time I became aware of Rufus, Washington Post. RIP Washington Post sports section. Yours was probably in the Style, though, probably the Metro or something like that.
It was the front page of the whole shebang.
Really?
Yeah, front page of the Post on Super Bowl Sunday.
Wow.
Above
the fold on the front page?
I know.
So this is how Rufus first gained notoriety. The rest is history. This became a cottage industry for him and his betting team for many years. And here we are today. We'll just fast forward. We'll cut to the rest. Because this guy, the most popular and maybe most successful bettor of his generation, guess what airlines he's flying on to the Waste Management Open in about an hour? Frontier Airlines.
My God. I wish Delta flew direct.
Yeah.
I'm literally doing it with just not even a carry-on, just a personal item. I booked a flight that I think I have a 50% chance of making because of this appearance. And so, you know, appearance number 17 is important.
Okay. And why are you going there, by the way? I know you're a golf bettor, but are you going just to be in the crowd?
I got invited by a friend whose company's doing like hosting has a suite there on 16. So
okay.
I'm just going for Thursday. It should be fun. I've been once for a practice round during my short stint at ESPN.
Right.
Where it was
Who were you dressed by when you were at ESPN? Would you like to give a shout out to who you were dressed by?
I was addressed
your fashion consultant?
Oh yes. Of course.
Deborah Song. Fashion stylist, Rufus's fashion consultant.
Yeah, let's talk about her for a moment.
She kind of started me off on on being a little bit more stylish. That's and, right. You know, I don't know if she'd be aghast at what I'm
wearing
right now.
No, she'd be happy with you, I think. Very happy with you. So, okay, Todd, I know Todd will have questions too on this, but we'll get to this. But so what we learned, first of all, there's a couple things because you always have a bunch of stuff. So last year we were talking about, you. By the way, Rufus, half the Massey Peabody analytics team, half of the Bet the Process podcast, which he does with Jeff Ma, which is very popular, a little more than 7 listeners that they like to joke about themselves, probably, I'm guessing. But also you have been, last year we were talking about Michael Lewis did the podcast series
Against
the Rules. You were
that was really good.
That was really good.
I mean, Michael Lewis is just an amazing storyteller.
Do you still hang out with him?
When I haven't seen him in maybe the last 6 or 7 months, maybe longer than that. So, but I still,
you guys, yeah, are on the outs. Is that what you're saying?
We still message occasionally.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's this latest thing you're on now?
He sees Jeff a lot more because they're kind of like neighbors and go hiking occasionally.
Wait, Jeff lives in Tiburon. Where does Michael Lewis live?
Berkeley.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bridge still.
Yeah.
Jeff lives in Paradise, by the way.
I know.
As you know. Yeah.
All right. So what's hiking with Michael Lewis? Michael Lewis would be my, you know, when people, oh, who would you like to have dinner with? And I would be like, no one really except Michael Lewis. I love Michael Lewis.
You say this every time Rufus is on, Todd. You say it every time. We get it. You want to have dinner with Michael Lewis.
He's only been one time, other time when he had the Michael Lewis bet. So here we go. Cause I took a shot at Will. Let me explain what's going on psychologically, folks. Will's hurt that I took a shot at him. So he has to come up with a poor shot back. Good job, Willie. Thank you.
Baseball, you throw at my guy, I got to throw at your guy. I mean, come on, got to protect your hitters.
Mm-hmm. What did you say there about Michael Lewis?
Oh, I was just going to say, having dinner with him was amazing. I mean, I had a one-on-one dinner with him when he was, pursuing the story. And the way he asks questions and just like he just keeps digging and it's just such a curiosity. And I was like, I was kind of awed.
He wants to know how your brain works, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I can see how he's able to sort of get to the heart of so many subjects that he writes about because he asks the right questions. Like
you did,
like a good sports bettor, right? You have to ask the right questions of the data. He asks the right questions to sort of understand a person and understand what they're doing.
Of all the things you've done, is that the happiest you've seen with the result of something, that a profile on you?
I don't know.
What's this latest thing you're in this week?
I would say probably not, just because I think the Washington Post article in 2011, like it was the first media I'd ever gotten. Like, yeah. Of course, I was the happiest about that. I was like, this is the coolest thing ever.
2011. I thought I would have said before that, but 2011, that's around when you and I met, 2011. Yeah. Wait, so I'll ask for the last thing. I'm trying to move it along so you can get to your flight here.
Okay.
So the Vice did something now that you were featured in this
Vice
week?
Did a, well, I'm like, it's an hour and a half long documentary. And I think I'm talking for maybe like, you know, 60 to 90 seconds, but right. They did a documentary very well done on sports betting and legalization. It actually even gets into prediction markets at the end and kind of the dark side of it. And how sports books kind of prey on problem gamblers and just exploring the ecosystem and how things have kind of unfolded. And I think it's kind of, it's sort of a no holds barred look at the industry. And I thought it was really well done.
Prediction markets have sort of become your betting life though, haven't they?
It's what I've been spending the most time on. Yeah. It's still not like, it's a minority of our volume, but it is certainly growing.
Certainly growing.
And I believe Bloomberg has a story coming out on Friday on prediction markets. And I talked to somebody from there back in November. So this is one of these sort of slow moving. I think I don't know what it's going to be like, but they did have a photographer come to shoot me yesterday. Okay. So I have no idea what to expect because I don't even remember what I said to the guy.
By the way, I'm the local news version of you. I did something here after one of our podcasts, and someone came up to me like 2 weeks ago. They're like, "Oh, I saw you on the news." I'm like, "What?" same sort of thing when you do it enough.
Well, look, I'm just an old grizzled veteran who's seen and been around for a long time and has opinions.
Okay, so what is your, before we get into the Super Bowl here, what is your opinion of how prediction markets will evolve? I will tell you what mine is, and you can kind of riff off that.
Okay.
Which is, I believe that prediction markets are here to stay. I think that we just had a ruling last week that drove that home. I also feel like Donald Trump Jr. being on the boards of both Polymarket and Kalshi, right? I just think that the writing on the wall is that prediction markets will always be nationally, they'll have a national umbrella, that it will be the commodities exchange that will control this. It will not go to the states, despite states wanting it to be under their jurisdiction. I do think that the sacrificial lamb will be sweepstakes markets, that loophole.
That's already disappearing.
That's already, state by state, that's a whack-a-mole game. That's disappearing. But I would imagine you think they're here to stay as well. Do you think that, getting back to the Vice thing, do you think they are rife with peril for a lot of people?
I do think they're rife with peril for sure. I mean, I think just like sports betting, I think there's going to be big problems with addiction. They're very addictive products. And I like the way that, I think they're even more addictive in a way, potentially, in the fact that like you can trade anything basically. And there's a market.
Will there be an 8.0 earthquake by the end of the month?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Right.
And do I think they're here to stay? I don't know. I think I kind of agree that based on, well, Trump Jr. being on the boards, and it doesn't seem like the Trump administration wants to stop it. Will the court stop it? You know, I'm not a legal expert, but I don't know what it's going to look like three, four years from now when there's a new administration in place. I think there's opportunities now, and so that's why I'm building on it now.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And you are, you're making markets on there, you're
making markets, taking markets,
all of it,
you know,
yeah,
building out, we, you know, automated trading stuff.
Okay.
With our opinions.
So when
I just noticed that, like, I was, while you were introducing me, I just got a notification that we got a large fill on something I didn't expect to get a large fill on one side. I on the market of, will there be a 10 plus point comeback win? Somebody filled me 20,000 contracts on yes, 16 cents. So I'm on the yes. I expected to be on the no. I had kind of seeded both sides and was the highest bid on the no. Because, you know, I'm always rooting against things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, somebody came in and filled me on the yes, which is interesting.
So what is that? That's like a $3,200 bet at 6-1?
I mean, you're better at math than me. Let's see.
So that's, so you're on the, so
I have 22,000 contracts. So basically, so it's a $22,000 swing between win or loss.
Right. So about 3,200 to win about 18,000.
3,500 to win 18.7.
Okay. Yeah.
3,500 to win 8.7K if there is a 10 plus point comeback.
Yeah. Some teams down double digits and comes back to win.
Comes back to win. It's not any point in the game. It's to come back to win the game.
Right, right.
Gotcha.
Right. There's a separate largest lead market.
Okay. What does that represent in terms of your percentage of bet, of a handle that you've got out here in this
3,500?
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't have much handle yet.
Yet, but then we talked about
I've placed zero bets in Las Vegas or on any legal sports book so far.
And as we discovered last year when you did the show, and thank you for doing it last year as well, your betting, you used to be the guy at the Westgate when they would be the only shop in town starting on whatever that was, the first Thursday night, whatever night it was, you'd go to the back of the line, 2K max, that kind of thing. That was the old days. And then it was the glory days for you, right? And then it was, oh, wow, Will Hill's opening a shop down here. Not this Will Hill, but the Will Hill.
Maybe he could, too.
South Point's opening. Everybody runs down to the South Point. And now we're in the age of, oh, the Sunday night of the championship games, DraftKings is already putting out a bunch of props already. And so it's a different world. And you, who are generally an underish better with a lot of stuff,
yeah,
wait till the very end.
Well, I'm not waiting till the very, very end, but I'm also just not working as hard and getting things ready as quickly as I used to.
You're old and fat is what you're saying.
Yeah, basically.
You're content. Can we ask him, what was the width of that market? When you put 16 cents out for the yes, what was the no at that point? What was the market, like 16 cents, 22 cents or something like that?
So I had seeded no at 80 cents. I'd gone no at 80 cents, which put me at the top of the market.
So 16.20, basically.
Has the market moved? Has the team become, has the total gone down or anything from last night?
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah.
So
right now, the market is 1 cent wide, though. You can buy yes at 15 or no at 84. And I actually priced this out at...
But with size or just 16, like one or two contracts there? Because I've watched on these Kalshi markets, they say it's 1 cent wide, but it's not really because you can only bet like $50 on 1 cent wide. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's traded $51,000 so far. Think about this. I got 20,000 contracts filled. So
does that make you wonder, hey, wait a second, if this was at 16 cents, 20 cents, really, because you're saying 16 and 80 was when you seeded it, right? So that would make it 16.
I don't even think I was top of market at 16. I didn't think I would get filled there because I just assume I'm going to get the action, people betting the yeses.
And Todd, if you ever have dinner with Michael Lewis, you can ask him.
On 17 plus comeback.
Michael Lewis doesn't know anything about math, as someone on our show doesn't know anything about math. And I'll tell you, he has a red beard and loves rolls. Go ahead.
Wait, Todd, by the way, in all seriousness, this seems like we would be so right down your alley with your financial back.
It's funny that you're talking about, because I've been looking, there's a guy, Chance, who who sometimes tweets you on the show, who's on my Discord, and he does. Yeah. So there'll be people in the Discord be like, oh, we can't get that number that Todd put up with 3:45 left in the game. And how come? Blah, blah, blah. And they'll start, you know, and they can get it if they just get other books. But Chance is always like, guys, just get other books or just go to damn Kalshi. Kalshi has. I went to Kalshi. I was like shocked. I went to Kalshi on an in-game basketball game, college basketball game, a day game where there was nothing else going on. And the amount of money on the in-game market that was being bet was insane. It wasn't even a big game. I think it was like Wichita State against some other nonsense team, you know? And you've got like people betting thousands and thousands of dollars on these in-game college basketball games. And you can, and not only that, Kalshi leaves it open all the time. It never goes off. It's sometimes like there's a minute left in the game and you can get on it. So Chance is constantly sending us things. Oh, I got under 153 when Todd put up under 152. So I think I really have to get on this Kalshi thing because it's crazy what's available now.
It's an exchange. It's peer-to-peer.
Yeah.
By the way, I just saw like somebody, I was just able to take just a second ago, yes, on a 14-plus point comeback win at 4 cents. 4%. I think there was some automated bot trading that kept like it was jumping somebody else probably and did like doesn't know what the true price is.
So Rufus, tell the people though, people don't know what that means when you're saying that's 22-1, correct? 4 cents?
4 cents. It means 4%.
Right.
When you trade off not 22-1, 24-1, but
24-1. Okay, whatever. The point, right. People don't understand what when Rufus is saying 4 cents, what he means is he's betting 4 cents for something that could, if it happens, he gets a dollar back. So he gets 96 cents.
Think about when you bet, you normally probably have like a percentage for something and then you convert it to odds, right? Like, so I feel like this kind of, at least for somebody that is, this makes more intuitive sense for somebody that doesn't sort of come from the gambling world and think in American odds terms, which I think all of us were that way at some point, probably. I was that way when I went to LVSC. And then, I mean, now I think like, oh, I think minus 150, not 60%. But if you think about it, like it is like...
You just have to immerse yourself in it and you'll start to... Yeah. But now, for the person who's listening, and we'll get to the Super Bowl here because Rufus got to go, so we'll jump to Rufus first. But the person who is just thinking, oh, this sounds awesome, I want to do this. Is there a prediction market, Polymarket, Kalshi, Novig? Is there one that you would point them to? Or is it all kind of, in your opinion, sort of the same? And, or would you also, or in addition to that, would you also say to them, hey, if you don't have a model, stay away from in-game, just do pre-flop for a while?
I would actually maybe argue the opposite, and that, you know, especially if you decide to go to a game, then you want to bet it live.
Oh, that's different. Yeah.
But I still haven't done that, but I kind of want to just to sort of see what the latency is, to see how big of a problem court siding is.
So quick now.
Right. But yeah.
Yeah.
But I think
sports betting apps, but what he's saying is Kalshi might be different, right?
No, I wouldn't be betting live while something is going on. Like, just because I know that I'm not seeing things in real time and there's people at the game that are actually observing what's happening in real time. And, you know, so I can get adversely selected very easily.
Is there, would you recommend them at one instead of the others?
I would say, so, I mean, I think it's all about price shopping. I think Kalshi has higher fees and so you're not, but generally a more liquid market. Novig, I'm not sure as much live, but I think if you want the best price, I think Novig is 100% the best place to go.
I think you're right about that.
You can get like, you know, there's props that are trading. Like I think it was Jackson Smith and Jigba receiving yards, like over minus 104, under minus 103 for a prop. And, you know, for the main market stuff, you'll see like, you know, for the total, I'm sure it's going to be like minus 102 on one side and plus 101 on the other. So you're, and there's no commission after. So you're basically like the bar you have to overcome to win is a lot lower.
And sometimes we talk about this a little bit on A Numbers Game, which is some of these, when it relates to sports, right? Different story when you're talking about who's going to be the, you know, there's insider trading on much of this stuff, like, right?
How fat will Gil be on September 21st? Right. Over, under 235.5. Most people are betting over. Wow, went to 78 cents, 79 cents, that's 80 cents. Whoa, 92 cents. Look out.
While your attempts of humor at humor are appreciated, that I can influence, but I don't have insider training on that. What I'm referring to is, right, because Bad Bunny on the Grammys said the word potato. He goes, congratulations to all at Polymarket who cashed on me saying potato.
Trevor
right?
Noah, so I think, or wasn't it Trevor Noah?
Who did I say?
Yeah, or do you remember there was a Coinbase CEO who, because they have dimension markets, will these words be uttered basically during an earnings call? And at the end, he said, oh, for those of you following, I don't think I got to these words yet, and just said them all at the end.
Right. So there's the ability to influence. There's also the insider trading, which is, let's say, a coach's market. Who's going to be the next coach of the Miami Dolphins? If you get that information beforehand, you can also, you will read the tea leaves on those. A lot of these markets will call that shot in advance. But there are those markets, right, where you'd think they would know some stuff, but they don't. Miami to make the college football playoff, for instance, which I bet at like 17%, ended up getting as low as 7%. They didn't know. They didn't know that at all. So there's a lot of opportunities like that.
There's a market on will Elon Musk attend the Super Bowl and a bunch of other people too. But right. I mean, you know, yeah. I'm like,
who's going to bet that? Yeah.
Well, if he goes to the Super Bowl, he should bet it.
He should. And people who know him. Right. But you as a sort of casual should not.
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
My favorite one is if the Will Hill family goes to a Yankee game in April, will the stadium run out of refreshments before or after the sixth inning? I go before.
You know what I love about this? Todd Wishnev, an easy target for Will and I both. And Will and I couldn't be more dignified. Look at Todd. Just outgoing male. That's all. All right. Well, Rufus
will
has got
to
go.
Will Toddy continue to be fat? Yes, 100%.
All right. Hey, Rufus has a heart out. The man's got to catch a Frontier Airlines flight to get to the waste management.
Dark times here. Dark times.
All right. Super Bowl 60, so that you can get out of here. Do you have any bets or any thoughts? I know you say you're waiting to make most of your bets on the side or the total to begin with, or the money line. What is your strategy there?
I bet Seahawks -4 when it came out right after the game ended, just because I was thinking that line would move up, and I know that my numbers would have Seattle higher. And I also bet an under at 46.5 immediately too, just, you know, based on vibes. Just thinking, I was like, that number is too high.
Based
didn't think
just your instinct.
Yeah, yeah.
Little blink from Malcolm Gladwell from Rufus.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I still think, like, I think Seahawks is the right side, but I'm hopeful that we'll see one of these old Super Bowl middles arise again, because we haven't had a Super Bowl with one team being more than like a field goal favorite. I don't think in, feels like 10 years maybe.
I think Rams-Bengals was 4 and they didn't cover, right? Bengals were favored by, Rams were favored by 4 and 1 by 3, if I remember correctly, 4 years ago or so.
This is like the biggest spread we've had in 10 years, though, I think, right?
Really?
It feels like it is.
4.5 is? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's been a bunch of games that are lined closer. And I remember back when I started out, like, there was spreads of, like, I don't know. I remember the first one that I bet was the Colts, Saints game. And I think that was like 6 or 7, something like that. So the Super Bowl middle, basically meaning that being able to bet the favorite on the money line and the underdog on the spread, just because you get a lot of public action on the underdog money line, and the people that want to bet the favorite are going to want to lay the points. And so occasionally you'll get those two sort of out of whack with each other. So.
Wow, you are correct, Rufus. The spread, the first spread going back in time that was bigger than this 4.5. There have been a few 4.5s.
Ooh, wait.
Broncos Panthers.
It's a 5-point spread, so it's going to be, you know,
Broncos Panthers, right?
Seahawks Broncos.
No, Broncos Panthers. I have listed here as 4.5.
Okay.
What was yours, Rufus? Seahawks Broncos? No, that was Broncos.
No, are we going all the way back to that Colts? No,
that's correct.
Or the Patriots Giants?
The New Orleans Colts game. The Colts were favored by 5, according to what I'm looking at.
Yeah,
here.
That and that was the first. Yeah, 2000. That was 2009.
That's right. The year before that was your Super Bowl with. Gary Russell was Pittsburgh by 7.
The Colts wasn't my first Super Bowl. I don't know. Yeah,
right.
That was definitely not. That was my second.
Yeah.
First is a professional gambler, though.
Okay. So
yes, Seahawks. I lean Seahawks. I don't have a strong opinion. I think I make number 5.5 or 6.
Okay. And you're on, and you took the under quickly. Mm-hmm. What props have you bet so far besides the one you just mentioned being filled?
I've had some filled for small, but nothing of substance yet, really. I know some that I'm going to bet.
Okay. Share a couple at all?
Sure. I mean, I think I will probably be betting Kenneth Walker unders.
Okay.
I honestly don't even know where he's lined yet exactly, but I feel like there's a lot of uncertainty there as to what share of the rushing load he'll actually get. I honestly think there's a lot of interesting sort of, maybe not storylines, but things that could influence a lot of these. I mean, like the whole Ramondre Stevenson, Travion Henderson,
right?
And the fact that Henderson has basically disappeared and every single week has been during the postseason has gotten fewer and fewer snaps and fewer carries. And he had like 6% snap share last week. And like, does that continue or not?
Will, what's your intel on that?
And I've just heard there a couple of people reportedly at practice that said the screen game was something they worked on a lot and that Henderson was involved. Again, take that for what it's worth, but it was somebody supposedly at practice that said the screen game, he expects to be a big part of it.
So I think props adjusted down already for that everybody Henderson knows that or no?
He's 2.5 receiving yards or 3.5 receiving yards. He's super low. It's basically saying he'll catch a ball.
And he's not normally a big force in the receiving game, but like, I mean, I think at this point, the market is pricing Ramondre as like the close to every down back. And so, I mean, I think there's opportunities on some of these where there is uncertainty for some alts.
For some alts.
Yeah.
Just to jump in, Rufus, are you saying that Henderson usage...
range of outcomes.
Like, do you think the Henderson usage is going to go up, or do you think the fact that he hasn't been used, that's going to continue? Like, where do you stand on that one?
I honestly don't know. Okay. I think going to be higher than it was last week.
Okay.
I think the second half was really odd because nobody could move the ball.
Sure.
And they clearly trust him in that environment. He's gotten rid of the fumbleitis he had earlier in the year and at various points in his career, so that says something that they trust him in those situations. But I mean, it could have also been what the Broncos kind of present and the style of running back he is relative to Henderson and more kind of game plan-y. So those are the things I don't really know. And I'm kind of going to be very humble about it and say, I don't know that. And I think basically look at different scenarios that I think are possible and kind of try to assign likelihood to those. And then because of that, I'll probably get a wider distribution of outcomes than I would for just saying this guy's getting, 20% of the snaps and, 25% of the rushes.
Could one of those just be in general the fact that you'll take Seattle on alt spreads as well?
I mean, I probably will have some Seattle on alts, but I don't know if there's the same uncertainty in game outcome that there is. I think there's a lot more uncertainty relative to a normal game in terms of the running back usage for those markets. And so if there are markets that you can find, and I do know they have these on Kalshi, the like 10 plus rushing yards for Henderson, 30 plus rushing yards, right? Like there's, and you can bet both sides there. At your DraftKings of the world, you can only bet, will this guy get 10 or more rushing yards, right? You can't bet the no on it. So I'm going to look for opportunities there basically to sort of embrace variance when it's warranted. Makes sense.
To embrace variance where it's warranted. That's kind of the general North Star for you on this stuff. Do you look at people, because we were talking about this on the radio side, Drew Dinsick specifically last week I was on, I was like, what's your approach to props? And I'm so glad he said this because this resonates with me, which is, you know how people are with Super Bowl props. They don't bet props all year, right? Super Bowl comes. There's hundreds of these. They all go crazy. Like, oh my God, I love this. I'm betting 20 props and all this stuff. And Drew's point was, the notion that you think you can just show up and bet these props having no numbers like, say, you do.
Yeah, but I'm just showing up having not really been doing it all year.
Right, but you have the data, right? And you plug it in. What, do you look at people like that and are you sort of like, hey, if you're having fun, great, but like, don't expect to win?
Yeah, I would say exactly that. Yeah. Somebody asked me, I think it was on some podcast recently, what advice I would give to a recreational bettor. And I would say either don't bet, but if you're doing it for entertainment, then bet on something that you like, get entertainment out of it. Bet on something that you actually will make you enjoy the game more, because it is recreation. It is, you're doing it recreationally. You are doing it for entertainment. And most of the stuff where there is value, where I could say, hey, bet no safety or something like that, that's just not going to be as much fun. Here's doing it for entertainment. Like,
here's the one that we always talk about, which I say is the prop that flummoxes new bettors, the newish bettors the most every year.
I know, three unanswered scores.
Three unanswered scores, because you bet it every year, right?
No, not really. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's, where is it priced? Somewhere in like the,
well,
I mean, the fair is probably somewhere in the minus 170 range on the yes.
I remember asking you this last year. You said anything above minus 170 is where you stop. Right. Minus 170 at the most is what you would do. So what I'm talking about is, most people, just to clarify, will a team score three times in a row, 2-point conversions, extra points accepted from that. So those don't count. Most bettors think to themselves, these are the two best teams in the NFL, right? Best team in the NFC, best team in the AFC. It probably rarely happens that one of them scores three times in a row. The plus is in the wrong place, right? The minus and the plus are reversed. The favorite should absolutely be the no, when in fact the favorite is the yes, and it hits all the time. Right? It happens all the time. But you're saying as long as it's like minus 160-ish, minus 150-ish, just don't go any higher than minus 170, I believe was your answer.
Like, I mean, it obviously is going to all depend on the point spread.
Right.
You know, with the higher point spread, it's more likely that you have three unanswered scores.
Right.
It's interesting that I've had real disagreements with some other people that are sharp on this. And I've met other people that have, like, it's not just me with the opposite opinion, but there's people with the opposite opinions, because football is like the NFL, it's a small data problem. We don't have that many games. And so there's the theory that, you know, a higher total should mean a larger chance of three unanswered scores, because there's more opportunities for three unanswered scores, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously a high spread is definitely, you know, more, it means it's more likely to have three unanswered scores. But
on the other hand,
is that, like, because a lower total means you have fewer opportunities, fewer scores are happening. But at the same time, a lower total also means that essentially the scores are less independent, or more independent, I should say. Sorry, they're more independent, because you have a total of like 55, and it's like, okay, what are the chances that this team is being stopped two straight times, like after the other team scored, right? Because teams are, you know, teams are scoring more, but it's going to be harder, you know, to, there is more dependence.
Rufus, you got
it. I think what you mean, Rufus, is in high scoring games, typically why does a game go over? Because both teams are scoring. Well, yeah. If both teams are scoring, then therefore it's harder to stop a team enough that you can get three in a row. That's kind of what I think what you're saying.
Translating my very bad explanation of correlation and stuff.
Rufus, you got to go. Your flight's in an hour and 5 minutes.
That's hour and three, but it's okay.
Hour, 3 minutes. You got
to
go, man.
I don't have to leave you. Well, we said 11:45. It's 11:39.
Bro, I'm telling you right now, that security line.
I'll get the flight, the 5 p.m. flight tonight.
Frontier Airlines does not play.
I know. I mean, I'll get a Southwest flight later if I miss this one.
Okay.
The problem is there's just no flights in between this and like.
All right. Then in your last 4 minutes, is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
How many wins for the Orioles?
How many wins for the Orioles?
Let's talk left field Camden Yards.
Pete Alonso.
Alonso.
All right. So wait, you are leaving in 5 minutes or you're not?
I'll leave in 5 minutes.
Okay. So spit out everything else you got on that you'd like to share. What's another sort of Rufus thought about this game?
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, so when you go through this, it's really interesting to see sort of all the insights. Because I've, especially now with like the charting data and stuff like that, I think I've gone a lot deeper. Like, for example, Seattle's defense is very good at shutting down opponents' first reads. And they give up a lot more checkdowns. Like, how does that play out? You know, one would think that is good for the New England running back's receptions.
Or is it? Right. You have some thoughts on that, I would imagine.
But also, New England on defense seems to be very varied in their approach. Like, they are not predictable, and they're going to throw an opponent. I think what they're good at is, and Matt David actually talked about this yesterday and about the process that so I'm using, like, I'm taking his words here, but
Matt David, by the way, one of the smartest.
Very smart. Yeah. But, you know, he said that they're really good. Like, they're the best team at game planning he's seen.
The Patriots.
Mm-hmm. At maximizing each individual week, they're doing something different that the opponent doesn't expect. And so that, if I can predict it, though, then the team should, you know, the opponent can predict it probably. So,
is it fair to say that this Super Bowl, maybe as much as any other, is you're going to have to pick a narrative, a script of some kind and just go with it with your bets?
I wouldn't say that. I would say it's like there are multiple scripts that could happen and you weigh the probabilities of those.
Okay.
But I would think if you're constructing like SGPs, then, you know, I think that's definitely the route to go down.
Do you delve in that at all?
I have. I really kind of got deep into it, or semi-deep into it, last football season, but I haven't done much this year. It's just, it's hard to really scale those up in a way that is that's not labor intensive.
Right. So not worth your time, in other words, ultimately.
There's other things that are, that I think will pay off more long-term as well.
You don't bet it in-game at all, right, Rufus?
Halftime stuff. Mm-hmm. That's about it.
The man loves a halftime, but not any game stuff.
I mean, I'm not really a great halftime bettor anymore. I feel like I've literally been like break even the last like 7 years at it, but.
You still doing it with college football at all, though?
No.
Really?
I mean, I'll literally just pull up like my antiquated model that it hasn't been updated in 10 years.
God.
I'm not even kidding. And just look and sometimes just seed markets like, or on Kashi, right? Like when a game's about to go to the half, because like Chris won't have opened with their second half line yet. So in essence, if I can know where that line is going to open at before it opens, I can have an advantage.
Which is not hard.
No. You should get on Kashi, Todd. You would.
I should. But usually I'm too busy discussing with Willie whether we want to play tie third quarter or not, or just play the under. And we're actually doing pretty good on those.
Yeah, those would be good. What's your number on tie third quarter for this game? I should see if
we don't do it until halftime. We got to wait and see what happens in the first half.
Probably plus 320, something like that.
The market on that is going to be up all game. So,
yeah, that's true. The market will probably be up this time all game. Yeah.
No. Rufus, go.
Okay, I will go.
Rufus Peabody, everybody.
Sorry for the abbreviated
dude, you're awesome.
Appearance. Enjoyed it as always, Gil.
The man was airborne. He told the pilot, turn the flight around.
Exactly.
The Megapod.
And believe it or not, the Frontier pilots listen.
That's right.
The gate agents don't, though.
By the way, enjoy the comfortable seating on Frontier. You'll enjoy that.
I paid for the better seats.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Okay. Rufus, thank you. I appreciate it. It's very kind of you to do this.
See you, Rufus.
He's got an hour to get his flight takes off in an hour.
59 minutes.
Good God.
Okay. By the way, on Kaushi, you can, but will he make the flight right now? Is it 62 cents?
That's right.
I think that's underpriced. I'm going to call the Uber right now.
Okay. All right.
See you guys.
See you, man. Thank you. Appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. This is so okay. Before we transition into what our thoughts are on the Super Bowl, we'll give this about 20 more minutes. But I just want to say this too, because Tim Lawson said this as the Megapod historian. He said this last week, and I want to just repeat this, which is this podcast had different characters on for many, many years, and when we went to Todd and Will, it just got better. And Tim texted me that again this morning. And so I just want to say, because I never say to Todd and Will directly, but I want to say to them now while we're doing the show, that is absolutely the case. They have both been so awesome on this podcast for, in Todd's case, many years. In Will's case, the last 3 years, I guess it is now. So just a thank you to both of these guys as well for being troopers, even though, you know, Todd can be annoying. We sort of just...
I mean, I don't want to be lumped in with Will.
No. You don't want to do that. How many of those 66? Let's get Tim on that. How many of those 66 weeks did Will go and do on?
I'm gold, Tennessee, man. Like, you just fade me and you retire. It's just it's amazing.
First of all,
it's funny. We were talking about Giannis on a numbers game, and I was like, man, if I just gave out Giannis to stay with Milwaukee, if I did that on the Megapod, he'd be traded within like minutes. But I don't know. We'll see.
By the way, if he just took his Titans bets out, he's plus money.
Yeah, it's probably plus. Yeah. Okay. So I went back and listened to last year's Super Bowl Megapod with Rufus.
Oh, dear.
And I remember the three of us, me and you two, I don't know what Rufus ended up having, but the three of us had the Chiefs last year against the Eagles. But I asked a question. I talked about this on the radio side this morning. I asked, okay, we all have the Chiefs, but if I came to you from the future and I said, hey, one of these teams blew out the other one, we all agreed that it would be the Eagles doing the blowing out of the Chiefs. If only we were smart enough to have taken that as a signal, right, and changed our bet. The difference is this year, because that's absolutely what happened. Philadelphia crushes them, right? The difference is this year when I asked that question, I'm on Seattle. I did not quite what Rufus did, but I immediately bought it down to 4, which some people say is a dumb move, not a sharp move. But I also thought it would soar in favor of Seattle. So I have a Seattle -4. But I also, knowing that question, I think the answer to that question this year is, oh, Seattle is going to be the team doing the blowing out. So I actually took them -7.5 on the alt, -10.5 on the alt as well. And I'm going to, that's kind of my sort of macro thinking on this. Todd, let's start with you. What's your thinking here?
I don't know, but you know, it reminds me when you brought up last year's Super Bowl, I had longest drive will be less than 80.5 yards. So meaning as long as they didn't start from the 19 or lower and get a touchdown, you would win. And the Chiefs were getting blown out. And they kicked off to the Chiefs, and the Chiefs got a holding, so they started at their own 10. Oh. They got a 90-yard backdoor touchdown, and I lost on it, which what I thought was an amazing bet. Because I was like, how many times do they actually start inside the 19 and then get a touchdown off of it, you know? And, of course, I lost on it. But anyways, it's as far as what I think about this game, I don't know. This is a hard game to call. I really don't know. I guess if you forced me, I'd take Seattle and lay the points if I had to play this game. But you know what? Sam Darnold could blow up at any moment.
Are we still doing that? It's like the Mario Cristobal. Man, like,
I still want to do it. Mario Cristobal lost because a guy didn't block on a punt. Now, I didn't want to say this, and I've held my rant for many weeks because I felt bad. I was rooting for Willie. I make fun of Willie. Willie makes fun of me, but I was rooting for him to win that and Chris Felica, even though I hate Cristobal with all my might. I hate him. And then in the third quarter, I have -7.5, and the guy forgets to tell number 87, if there's a man running directly to the punter, block him. Cristobal, give me a break. Yes, we're still doing it.
Thanks for rooting for me with my Indiana ticket. I appreciate that.
I felt it was more impactful for Chris and Willie than it was for you. So I had to make a decision, an executive decision, and I went with those guys because it was too big for them.
I made low 5 figures. I think they could have made way more. So you're probably right about that.
Yeah, I felt that was the fair thing to do.
So I will say this before we get to Will here, because you were saying if I had to pick, I'd take Seattle. So I don't use them often as a gauge, but like the common man who's just a casual bettor are the two of the guys who park cars at my building. And I was talking about this on radio today, which is both of them unsolicited have come to me at different times during these 2 weeks and said, I'm not really feeling this game, man. I haven't made many bets. And I'm curious if that's reflective of most people in the country. I don't know. Will, where are you on this?
That's interesting because I had the same feeling too. And maybe it's, you know what, we're in the content business. We're talking about the same game for 2 weeks, but something about the Patriots being right back in it, but it's not Brady. There's not that, I don't know, draw to it. Seattle doesn't really, you don't hate them or love them. I do get kind of the same sense with this one. And I don't have a lot of conviction. I've been talking all year about the NFC at cheap money line prices. I still have that in my pocket. I'll probably just take a little of New England just because I probably risked a little more than I wanted to on the NFC, knowing I think, or hoping at least I could buy back and figure out a middle situation. But I think Seattle wins. I think Daniel Jeremiah tweeted this out, or he was on one of these shows and said, if you just did a draft playground style out of like the first 30 picks, maybe 20 something would be Seahawks. I just think the Seahawks have a better roster. Good. I've thought all year the NFC was better. Remember, we grew up, or at least I did in the 90s, where every year it was the NFC, whether it was the Cowboys or the 49ers, eventually the Packers. I know it was your Redskins before that, but it was a long stretch of NFC dominance. I don't think it's going to be that. I don't think it's that extreme. I just feel like the NFC is a notch above the AFC. You can poke holes in the Patriots' path here. And look, there's no shame in, well, really either of these teams losing, but especially the Patriots. second year quarterback, coach of the first year. They were picking near the top of the draft last year, and here they are in the Super Bowl. But I think Seattle wins. I've called it 27-17, so that's the score I'll stick with. I think the best bets of all of these, though, and it's starting to tick down, trickle down, Darnold at plus money to win the MVP. I just, man, the media loves that guy. He's good with the media. You know, he took his lumps with the Jets. He never threw anybody under the bus. You know, everyone says class act, class guy. On his fifth team, he would really have to like get hurt or just play a terrible game and Seahawks win despite of him for him not to get the award. Is there a path? Of course, there's always a path. But just in terms of value, like volume, the value there, I think the plus money for a team that's minus 230 on the money line, minus 220 to get plus 120 with Darnold. And again, it's come down a little bit. It was plus 130. I think that is the best bet.
Yeah. And Willie, also before you go, the Patriots still haven't beaten anyone. If the Patriots had to go through what the Seahawks went through, would they even be in the Super Bowl? I mean, it's getting a little ridiculous at this point. They played the backup quarterback for Denver. They played CJ Stroud. I'd rather have Gilly playing quarterback than CJ Stroud in that particular scenario, because at least he wouldn't throw five interceptions. I mean, they still haven't played anyone. It's unbelievable, but it's really true.
And even Denver let him off the hook. I've watched that. It's funny. I've watched that Stidham fumble like 20 something times. And like half the time I think it's a fumble, half the time I think it's a forward pass. That set up 7 points on a short drive. And the other one was the sneak where he fell short. Now it sounds like bitter grapes because we picked Denver. We covered anyway with Denver. It didn't really matter. They got pretty fortunate in that Denver game.
Very fortunate. I agree.
So I'll go through the greatest hits of the last. Again, you talk 2 weeks about one football game, you're going to repeat yourself. So I apologize to anybody, but everything Will was saying, it does have vibes for me of 80s, early 90s NFC dominance over AFC, like the San Francisco, Washington, Dallas Giants domination of the Broncos and Bills in that era. This kind of feels that way to me. The other side of this, Aaron Schatz, again, Todd loves these kinds of things, but I just feel compelled to just vomit it all out. Aaron Schatz, at the championship game, we were on the group chat, and I said, as the Patriots were getting into the Super Bowl, I said, are the Patriots the worst team to ever make a Super Bowl? That was just, I just threw it out there. I'm curious.
And what did Aaron Schatz say?
So I texted Aaron Schatz. I was like, come on the radio show. Can you tell us? So Aaron Schatz, there's 60 Super Bowls, meaning 120 teams, but DVOA, he's only analyzed back to 1978. So it's 96 total teams with these Seahawks and Patriots. Out of the 96 teams to make the Super Bowl, these Patriots, keep in mind Aaron Schatz is a Patriots fan, but he's doing this objectively with DVOA. These Patriots rank 81st out of 96. 81st. Part of that is, per DVOA, they played the third easiest schedule in the regular season since 1978. All of those teams every year, it's the third easiest schedule. Todd and Will just talked about, you know, they scored 16 points to beat the Chargers, who had a banged up offensive line. They turned the ball over 5 times against the Bills and really against the Texans. And really, it was the two that Will Campbell landed on. It could have been 6 or 7 turnovers, but they had 2 really fortunate fumble recoveries that sealed the win. Otherwise, they probably lose to Houston, right? And then they overcome that, and then they beat the Broncos in a sideways blizzard.
And by the way, they lost to the Raiders. A team as bad as the Raiders, let's say you got to say the Raiders are the two worst, at least one or two, and as far as the worst team this year.
They got the number one pick. That's a good one. Did anyone ever lose to the team with the number one pick and win the Super Bowl?
There you go. That's my point. That's probably very, very rare, if at all.
And by the way, that loss is what kept them from having home field in the AFC Championship by common opponents. So anyway, do you have to sacredly believe in Aaron Schatz' DVOA ratings? You don't. But I do think it would be wise to sort of take that in context, right? To be like, oh, well, maybe they're not the third easiest schedule. Maybe they're not the 16th worst team to ever make a Super Bowl. But maybe it's in the ballpark, and I kind of get what he's getting at.
Definitely in the bottom 20th percentile.
Yeah, and now it should be noted that 4 of the 10 worst teams to ever make the Super Bowl going back to 1978 actually won the Super Bowl. So that doesn't mean you can't win the Super Bowl, right?
One game.
The 2001 Patriots. 2001 Patriots were the 10th worst. That was Tom Brady's first team. They won, obviously, against the greatest show on turf. the 1987 Redskins, who had three games that were scab teams, right? Scab games, the Doug Williams led team. That was one of the four, the 10 worst. And the two Giants teams, the 2007 and 2011 Giants teams that both beat the Patriots, those were two of the worst teams to ever make the Super Bowl, and they won. So it doesn't mean the Patriots can't win. It's just good context, I think, for all this.
And he's got Seattle, I think, the sixth best team of all time, which even saying that, seventh best. It doesn't feel like that. It really doesn't.
That's not good. Right.
But again, ballpark it, right? Okay, yeah. So they're one of the 30 best.
Right.
That's still good, you know? So that's
Vikings. Let me tell you what the 98 Vikings would have done to this team. 98 Vikings would have gone up and down the field. John Randall would not have been blocked. Gary Anderson would make the field goal this time. Yeah, it sure was. Up seven, couple minutes to go. He was 38 for 38 for kicks on the year, which was about to push to a 10-point lead. Misses, 7-point game. And retroactive Dumbo of the week. Denny Green with the greatest offense of all time in a tie game with 56 seconds left, took a knee and said, we'll go to overtime.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you thought Will Hill could not wedge the 98 Vikings into this podcast.
Wrong. Denny Green is who we thought he was. Not
Rufus. Rufus texted me. He goes, are you guys, he goes, are you guys taking side action on me getting to this flight? Yeah. Let me tell you something. He's a coin flip at best. He was way too confident about getting there.
You gave him the out at 2:38 or whatever, 11:38 your time. Hey, get out of here. And he was brazen.
Yeah, brazen. So props. I usually, like on this podcast for years and years and years, have done half times. The first thing I said in these 2 weeks was, I don't know Bad Bunny. I'm recusing myself from any Bad Bunny props. I've even become my father on this. I can't tell the difference between one Bad Bunny song and the other.
I like Good Bunny. You ever heard Good Bunny? Good Bunny's awesome.
So I want a Bad Bunny. The only thing I did do, I bet over on the national anthem when it was 122 seconds. It's 100. It went to 125. Now it's back to 123. Charlie Puth. I think he's got a choir. I think it's going to go long. That's the only sort of novelty prop I've done. What game props have you guys bet at all, Todd?
Go ahead, Willie. I haven't bet any.
I was just going to come in with a little PSA. What I told you on a numbers game, I think last week. Sometimes you get information on this halftime stuff. I have been told by the people who usually has pretty good information. The NFL was not happy, or whoever runs the halftime show was not happy last year. If you remember, it was the Thursday before the Super Bowl. The entire set list got leaked. It was on Twitter. It was right to a T, and the NFL didn't like that. So it's possible that some misinformation gets leaked this year just to see, all right, let me throw this out there and see what gets back to who, so we can maybe catch the leaker. So be careful of what year. I'm not saying don't bet it. And you know what? You take a shot on information you hear. Not that a lot of this stuff is readily available, but just caution.
Who was the halftime show last year? I forget.
Do we remember? Kendrick Lamar.
Kendrick Lamar, of course, right. Yeah.
I like that under 80 and a half yard drive thing again this year. I mean, it didn't work out for me last year, but it's -110, -120. So it's kind of almost like a flip.
And this is one of those, Fezzik even said, this is one of those where there's no real edge on the kickoff. Who's going to receive the opening kickoff? Because they
ever start inside the 20 anymore. The only way you get a touchdown for more than 80 yards is if you get punted down inside your 20, but nobody punts anymore anyways.
Well, then you have these Dumbo returners who fair catch the ball at the 10, right? So that's the counter to that. Yeah, you get a penalty that puts you back at the 10-yard line. Yeah,
you could lose, obviously. I feel like there's not that many, you know, maybe, I mean, I don't have any data on this, obviously, but it just feels to me like over 80-yard touchdown drives are not that normal.
I let me back up what Will was saying about Sam Darnold MVP too. Like if your conviction is that Seattle is going to win this Super Bowl, and I was on Mad Dog Radio with Jared Stillman, and he was really good, but we got on this Sam Darnold thing, and it's interesting how he read it one way and I read it the other. I read it your way, Will, which is that if Seattle wins this game, there is such a narrow path for anybody else to win MVP, and that the voters, all things being equal, and maybe not even completely equal, right? We'll bend over backwards to close out this Sam Darnold, like Todd still shitting on Sam Darnold, right? to close out this narrative, like, give this guy his due. He has now won a Super Bowl. We've been crapping on him for all these years. Sam Darnold is your Super Bowl MVP. It was interesting that Jared Stillman, who's not a better but a mainstream guy, he was like, he takes that narrative that has existed all these years, and he comes to the same, you know, the same narrative of the Seahawks win this, but then his conclusion in the end is the opposite. He goes, they're going to do everything not to give it to him because people think he's not the reason they'll win it, which I just don't agree with, right? I agree with your side of things. So to me, anything, I agree with you, and it is starting to trickle down a little. Anything plus money with Darnold to me is a great bet, I think, for MVP. I'm not sure how you
will
view
a
that.
Drive start at the 5-yard line or less.
What's your number?
It's no is -125. Yes is -105. I like no.
Somebody stopped inside the five, right?
Right. On if they go for it on like a fourth down or something, or if they punt them into. But I think you don't see that many punts inside the five anymore. I feel like that's very rare. They just pooch it, and the guy catches it at the 10 or something, or goes in the end zone.
And then we get a text from Fez about how nobody's watched football before, nobody's played football before.
Right, yeah. But my point is, doesn't no minus one. So you're telling me there's not more than a 54% chance that we don't get a start at the 5-yard line or less?
What book has like that?
Caesars.
It's not bad.
Todd Wishnev, just cherry picking one off Caesars, just like that.
I don't know if I'm right about this, but I'm just saying it. To me, it sounds pretty good.
Todd, how would you even do the math on this? I brought this up on a numbers game earlier. I'm sure you didn't hear because you don't listen to Gilly's show, which is fantastic for whatever reason. Yeah. I don't know why you don't listen.
Why would anyone?
I'm not sure. I think it's circa. I know it's one of the books out west. Matt Eumanns was talking about this prop. I think, if nothing else, points for creativity. Will the final score of the Super Bowl match any previous Super Bowl final score? The yes is +400. There's 58 different ways you can win because there's only, I believe, one repeat score. There was 27-17 in two different Super Bowls, but you win on 58 scores. You're getting 4-1. It's funny. You go through the Super Bowl final scores. There's a lot of odd ones that you don't want. That's not good for the yes. 43-8, Denver, Seattle. Right. Last year was, 40-22. That's unlikely, but I don't know. Do you think there's value there, or is that just impossible for you to kind of calculate?
It's impossible to calculate.
Yeah, but it's so interesting, isn't it? If you could somehow run a simulation every 100 games, how often do two scores come out the same? That would be kind of interesting. But right. I guess you just don't realize how many possible scores there are. Well, there's 16-14, there's 17-16, there's 19-17, 21-13. That's one. I'm sorry. You guys set me up for that one. I didn't even know I could use it again.
That was an alley-oop to the fat man, and he stuffed it home.
I was like hanging in midair, wondering how he should dunk it in the end. We nailed the two games, though, that when they finished the same. Super Bowl 17, I remember, because the Redskins beat the Dolphins 27-17, and then that Larry Brown Cowboys win over the Steelers in 95.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. 27-17. Riggo, by the way, what a guest last week on a numbers game. Man, what a moment. Let me just reminisce for a second. Okay, I'm back. Field goals. Didn't you text them about field goals in this game, Will? Weren't you going to bet something with field goals?
One of the books we use has Seahawks over 1.5 field goals -150, and the market was -200. So that was just one of our books had an off number. That's all.
Damn, you know what I completely forgot to do? I completely forgot to retweet this on Twitter.
Oh, dear.
Sorry, Twitter. I forgot to retweet you. My apologies. Oh dear. All right, so any other props? Will, did you
bet? Are there any cross props with college basketball games?
There will be, yeah.
Just pro games?
Yeah. No, let me see. Let me check real quick off Bookmaker. Just to go offshore for a second, see if we have any.
Do you guys believe in this theory? I think it's a Steve Fezzik. I don't know if it's an origination or an aggregation, but I've heard him talk about this in past years, that for the Super Bowl, the coin toss is a commemorative coin, so the heads is heavier and more pronounced, and that's more likely to make it land on tails. Do you guys buy in that?
No.
Okay.
That is a classic Fezzik.
Well, he does it. I will tell you the Steve Fezzik thing that does make sense, though, for those who missed it on radio, which is the time difference between, or the time gap, I should say, between the coin toss and the opening kickoff is longer in a Super Bowl than it is on a regular game. So he says if you have it open up, your books open up, you can often pick off
first quarter bets.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Knowing who's gonna score, who's going to score first quarter point spread, all kind of stuff like that.
Everything. Yeah. Who's the first person to catch a pass, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right. There's
props. I forgot about that. Who's going to get the first? Right. That's great stuff too. Right.
Right. All that stuff. So that's good advice for Fezzik. I don't know about the coin being weighted differently.
You got to ask about it Friday.
Yeah. Yeah. What's this about the, what's this?
What's this?
The coin is weighted differently? And he'll be like, oh dear.
I think he's 31-27 or something Tails. So Tails does have a slightly to back him up.
Will the MVP be awarded to a QB? Yes, -230. That's kind of interesting based on what you guys were talking about.
Yeah, we talked about this today, Kelly and I, on the show, where there's been 59 Super Bowls. 34, I believe, have been quarterbacks, MVPs. Yeah. And really, if it's not a quarterback, the only other option offensively has been wide receiver. Since 1998, there's only been five wide receiver MVPs in Super Bowl history. All five of those happened since 1998 because the game has changed, right, to a passing game. Running backs just don't get it anymore.
Was Terrell Davis the last one still?
Who?
Last wide receiver was Cooper Kupp a few years back.
I'm saying, wasn't Terrell Davis the last running back?
Terrell Davis was the last running back in 1990.
That's amazing.
The last defensive player was Vaughn Miller 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
The last defensive back to get MVP was Dexter Jackson after the 2002 season for the Bucs. So it's a quarterback thing. And remember with the voting on this, this is the other thing with Super Bowl. This is not like we're waiting for the NFL awards season longs to be announced tomorrow night. With Super Bowl MVP, they have a deadline to submit their vote, which is the 2-minute warning.
Oh, so really?
Remember how back when we were kids, like you knew Doug Williams was the MVP, like at the beginning of the fourth quarter, they would announce.
They have to vote before the game's over. How could they do that?
Yes. So this is what I'm getting at. So if there's some heroics, let's say, so everybody submits their vote, and then there's some heroics, Jackson Smith and Jigba makes this, amazing one-handed catch for his third touchdown of the game with, third arm sticking out of his neck, whatever it is. And people are like, oh my, to win the game, let's say, right? They were down and they win it. Maybe then, and Kelly, we were talking about this, you are allowed to resubmit at that point. But I'm curious how many people would actually be willing to do that unless there's something so amazingly dramatic. So that also lends to why the quarterback gets it as fault, right? You're more likely with a game, we'll just give it to Darnold.
If in doubt, just give it to Darnold, right?
Right. So keep that in mind as well.
That's interesting. Yeah. But that's open all the time because I remember I bet Hurts to win the MVP during the game last year. Like they had it open in game.
Yeah, they leave it open.
They leave it open. Yeah. Some books do.
And
some
I think you might actually, on that in-game bet, you might have a better shot at, because you could probably, it's such an outlier that a quarterback's not going to get it, that you could probably say to yourself, oh, wait, if this such a touch happens, this guy's going to be the MVP. You know what I mean? You could say it easier at halftime, say, or three quarter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And with the resubmission stuff, as Kelly was saying, well, no one wants to get embarrassed. I don't think people's names ever get attached to their MVP vote. In the same way they do with season longs. Season longs, you have 50 voters and your name does get attached, right? They out you. Oh. Aaron Schatz, who Kelly, Matt Brown, and I were at dinner with, when we found out Lamar Jackson was not a unanimous MVP winner 2 years ago, Aaron Schatz knew that his was the only vote that prevented it. So like for 5 minutes at dinner, Aaron Schatz is like, oh no. Right. But MVP for Super Bowl for this, your guy who's for the Super Bowl, nobody ever finds out who votes for who. So I don't know that there's any embarrassment.
It's funny because I know in the finals they attached the names to it. Because I remember Hubie, what sticks out to me is the 2019 finals, Hubie Brown, when everyone voted for Kawhi, Hubie Brown actually voted for Fred VanVleet. And they do list who people vote for, but that's in the NBA. I'm not sure about the Super Bowl.
Rufus apparently is very embarrassed by the fact that he's taking Frontier Airlines. He said, you should also mention to your listeners that Jet Suite was fully booked, or I would have done that for sure. Jet Suite is awesome. Oh, he says he left way too early. I have 15 minutes to spare. Now I'll probably miss it because I go get food. Wow. All right. He got there. My bad. So I guess security was fine. That's the difference going on a Friday versus now. Will, you have any other bets that you made props-wise?
I mean, I like the Walker under. Rufus talked about it. Patriots have been really good against the run. Vidal and Harvey under 3 yards per carry. Texans is a team 48 yards rushing. So the run defense has been really good for the Patriots here. So, but that's about it. It's not, I think we covered it. I don't know. Is there anything else? Let me ask you, Gilly, if you had to bet MVP and you can't pick the quarterbacks and somebody's like, I want a long shot. I just want something fun to root for. Is there anyone? I know people brought up Imanwari. I can't find anyone. JSN, the price is too short. Obviously he's great, but I don't know. Do you guys see anything for MVP other than the quarterbacks?
Not on Seattle, I don't. But on New England, I do. Like, if you thought New England was winning the Super Bowl, I think Travion is the play.
Oh, interesting.
Because he did have a few.
What did you say? At what?
Travion Henderson at 25-1. Because, and also based on what Rufus was saying earlier, right? That with running backs, there's some variance. Travion Henderson, if you recall, and you remember this if you do guessing lines, Todd, Mondays on a numbers game. Mm-hmm.
It's a great show.
Travion Henderson had a few games where he exploded, right? So that would be the one player where I'd be like, okay,
how about Boutte or somebody like that to get a million catches or Mac, what's his name? The guy who walks around barefoot. What's his Mac Hollins?
Mac Hollins,
somebody like that.
Mac Hollins seems like a stretch, but
yeah. But Noah, to your point on Seattle, like I don't know which way I would go because the other guys, right? It's Darnold, the market is Darnold, May, then like two other Seahawks, right? It's Kenneth Walker and Jackson Smith and Chuba before you get to another Patriot. So those two Seahawks are too short to like even want to take a flyer on.
I saw somebody put a grand on like one of the kickers. I think it was either Meyer or the Borgalis, the Patriots kicker. It's like, man, I mean, I guess at 300-1, there's always a path. Low scoring game guy hits like a 70-yarder or something crazy to win it. But other than that,
Let people
know.
How about
Hunter Henry, 125-1? He gets.
There has never been a kicker to win Super Bowl MVP. No. I don't believe.
How about a tight end?
Oh, wait a minute. Did that guy in Super Bowl 5 for the Colts get Super Bowl MVP? Hold on, Jim O'Brien.
I don't think so.
He didn't get it. He just kicked the game winner. No, you're right. There has been a kick returner, punt returner, Desmond Howard, but I don't think there's ever been a kicker. Let me see. Super Bowl 5. Nope. Was a linebacker.
Shaheed's the one people have mentioned, 50-1. You know, he's going to get his hands on some kick returns. Maybe he makes a play in, gimmick play. Shaheed. I mean, I could see that's not totally far fetched, but again, I don't know. There's nothing like I'm dying to bet with these.
Super Bowl 5, actually, the last Super Bowl where it's someone from the losing team won. Was Super Bowl 5, Chuck Halley of the Cowboys against the Colts. And the only time there were co-winners, Super Bowl 12, Harvey Martin, Randy White of the Cowboys.
That will never happen again. I will say, bold prediction, they will never have a losing player be MVP ever again. Finals.
What about co-winners? Do you think co-winners will happen before a losing?
I guess that could happen if they just tie on the vote, but I just can't see. There's just our culture now. I don't know. Losing player. Like, I thought LeBron had a good case for it. Was it the 2015 finals against the Warriors where he led the categories in absolutely everything? And they didn't win. I thought Iguodala won. I actually thought Curry got screwed there and Curry should have won. But if you're ever going to do it, I know it's a different sport, but man, I can't see a scenario where one team wins the Super Bowl, they're going crazy, they did it, but we're going to give the MVP to a guy on the losing team. It's just not how it goes anymore. I don't know.
Also, your point about James White having that Super Bowl MVP. What do you have, like 14 catches?
14 catches, three touchdowns, including the game winner. And Brady did throw a pick six in the game, but Brady, Brady's Brady, and he let him on the comeback.
That was a Falcons game, right?
Yeah. First overtime game in Super Bowl history.
Really? You're not winning with 14 catches and three touchdowns?
I know.
Come on. What are we doing? All right. Listen. Sometimes we have more props. Rufus is a guy who waits now to bet most of his. But that's how we feel about this Super Bowl. So a lot of Seattle conviction. I know the Patriots fans hate me for that. But I do get 80s, early 90s vibes on this Super Bowl. So it's Seattle for me. I've bet alt. I'm going to have Darnold for MVP. I don't know what other props I'm going to have. But Will, do you think you'll bet more between now and the Super Bowl? You don't anticipate betting more props between now and then?
I don't feel the need to force it. I'm happy with the stuff I took. Happy to have the NFC one. I just like we bet every day. It's not. I know for some people it's like, oh, Super Bowl, we got to bet more. But we're like we're betting every day. College basketball, you're betting tennis, Taylor tennis. There's just because it's the Super Bowl, it doesn't mean you need to bet extra stuff. And I don't want it to ruin my.
There's a whole slate of college basketball.
That's right.
I'll have. I'll have more money on tennis that day, and Todd will have more money on college basketball.
And the other thing is you can play these games in-game, too. All this stuff will be open. So, you know, me and Will could get third quarter tie. We could get third quarter. We could win 7-7, 0-0, 3-3. There's a lot of scores that we could win that, you know.
Yeah, a lot of outcomes possible in this game.
Yeah.
Let that be the takeaway. All right, for Todd Wishnev, again, T Wishnev is where you can find him on Twitter. He does all his college basketball stuff as well. I don't know if he'll ever reopen it, but, you know, that'll be up to Todd's discretion. Will Hill, the name of the podcast is Shoulda Bet More. You do that three times a week during the offseason too, right?
Monday, Wednesday, Friday, year-round, until they tell me not to.
All his stuff at Fox News as well. Thanks
Fox
to you
Sports.
Both.
Fox News would be, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Fox News would be different.
Fox Sports. I'm getting, you know, I'm fried. That's why I keep saying things I don't mean to say. Thanks to Tim Lawson, by the way, for being the Megapod historian and commemorating every guest stats every week on the 15-year anniversary of the Megapod. Appreciate it. The next podcast we will do will be the Indian Wells podcast, I believe, Tennis's fifth major. And then after that, we will do the March Madness pod where Todd and Will will join me again for the March Madness podcast. Who knows? Maybe we'll get Parlay in here with us. We'll see.
I feel like we're going to have a good March Madness one this year. Like I could feel like last year we weren't really good and we tried for too many
upsets. There's not going to be any more upsets. And Todd, you watch this stuff as close as anybody. These top 10, 12 teams, barring something unlikely, they're not getting upset in round one, round two. There's such a gap now with NIL. We had no upsets last year. We had very few the year before. If you're looking for that mid-major to make a run, if you're looking for the FAU, I don't think those teams exist anymore.
Alabama's going to get upset.
Okay.
Not even an upset at this point with Alabama. Like, are they even good?
They stink on defense. They're so bad. They do.
Yeah. When you have a sport where Arizona, Michigan, Duke, Iowa State, Houston, Gonzaga, Florida, Vanderbilt, Virginia, Nebraska, BYU, Michigan State, Illinois, Purdue, UConn, Kansas, Texas Tech. I mean, there's so many good teams this year. Yeah, so we'll do that. And famously, one of the great podcast episodes ever, when Will and Todd just went ape on March Madness. Will had FAU in the Final Four. And Todd had San Diego State and Michigan State getting super far. And then he almost killed himself because he would have finished first.
Is there anything better than having the bracket in your hands on that Monday and just talking about the games, filling out? There's just nothing better. It's the best.
I told somebody that story. I haven't thought about that story in a long time. But I told somebody that story. And he's like, as I'm telling it to him, he's like, oh, no, don't tell me. Don't tell me.
We'll end with this, but just to refresh. So Todd, during our March Madness podcast, was making all these wacky picks. And I said to him, not once, but twice during the podcast, I said, you know, Todd, with all these outlying picks, you should probably enter in one of these big contests that exist nationwide. Todd actually went to perform a Steve Fezzik errand, I believe it was, to Arizona.
And I also went down to Arizona because I was going to try to do the same kind of entry on some other, because to me, I thought DraftKings is over for me, but I forgot that I could have just put $100 into DraftKings, but I was looking to do it at Barstool or one of these other ones, and they didn't have it, so I just said, oh, forget it, because I didn't realize, well, just dummy, just put $100 into DraftKings, because they wouldn't have cared whether I went on their contest. They don't care.
So fast forward a little more than a week, so this is during the like Elite Eight, I think, or Sweet 16 or Elite Eight. Todd is brackets killing, and Todd then all of a sudden gets the idea, oh, I should probably see what my score would have been compared to these guys who actually...
Well, because Doug Wedge, one of our listeners, was in second place. And he told me all the scoring and how it works. And then I had the sheet there on my night table because I had just done it a couple days, you know, a week or two before.
Oh, Gilly. Gilly.
What?
I believe we have a new Washington Wizard. You got to always make sure these are not fake accounts.
No, it's true. Anthony Davis.
Anthony Davis is a wizard. Wow.
Yeah. Boy, poor guy. I thought for a second you were going to tell me Giannis was a warrior. No, Anthony Davis is a wizard. So, but in real time, and Todd is telling me, Todd's going through the math on this. He's calculating it. He's like, oh my God, I'm gonna be so angry. I'm gonna be sorry. So I literally, as Todd's friend, am praying that he's
for
not.
For days you were telling me. For days you were telling me, because I kept saying to you guys, is it possible that my picks, because San Diego State kept winning and UConn kept winning. And I was like, is it possible? And you're like, oh no, all you could possibly get was the two of it. It's not possible.
I'm saying this to Todd, but in my head, I'm like, oh, shit, he might be in first place. Because, and the reason being that if Todd ends up being in first place and didn't participate, he would have cost himself $1 million. I'm not sure how much he would harm himself.
I would have drove right back to Arizona, got off at the Hoover Dam, and jumped over. Yeah. That would have been the end of it.
So instead, you, in the end, thank God, you finished second, right? Yes. You would have finished second.
Would have cost me $35,000.
$35,000. So we can live with that.
Yeah.
He has lived. Anyway. All right. March Madness pod coming as well. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Todd. Thanks to Will. Thanks to Rufus. Good luck with all your Super Bowl bets. Super Bowl 60.
Rate, review, subscribe.
Do that as well.